Welcome to the Project Zion podcast. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts Community of Christ offers for today's world.
Hello, and welcome to Project Zion podcast. This is your host, Robin Linkhart, and today's topic is common consent and how Community of Christ practices the principle of common consent as we do the business of the church and journey together as a people of faith. This is of particular interest as we approach World Conference 2019, which will be held in Independence, Missouri, April 5 through the 13th. Today, our guest is John White. John has served as a president of 70 since 1998. He currently serves as president of Quorum 6 and was set apart as senior president of 70 in 2010, and he continues to serve as the senior president. He supports 10 mission centers and works closely with apostles Lachlan Mackay and Janae Grover. Welcome to Project Zion Podcast, John. Thanks so much for making time to share with us today.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a joy to be here.
So, John, in addition to everything else you do, you are a professional registered parliamentarian and have, in fact, played an important role in the church as we explore how common consent is lived out in the Community of Christ. So tell us what it means to be a professional registered parliamentarian and what brought you to pursue this path.
A professional registered parliamentarian involves extensive training, particularly in Robert's Rules of Order, newly revised, and it involves being prepared to work with groups and organizations on a variety of different kinds of things, from serving as a parliamentarian and advising a presider to actually presiding over the meetings at a convention, for example. It involves writing opinions, helping to craft resolutions that might come before conferences. It's renewable every 6 years, and in order to renew, you have to have done some of those specific kinds of practices that I just mentioned. It's not just a brain thing. You actually have to be out practicing it. And I'm able to do that mostly with church conferences, mission centers, et cetera. So it is something that is an ongoing and a process, and it has to be renewed. Now, my own interest in parliamentary procedure actually started for me as a child attending World Conference. I was fascinated at a very young age with the process that was used to work through the business. I loved attending conference and was fascinated as I watched all of that procedure take place. At some point, at a fairly young age, I was also captured by something that the Apostle Paul wrote to the saints in Corinth, and what he said was, "Let all things be done decently and in order," and that kind of captured my attention, and I found that parliamentary procedure kind of fit with that philosophy to help conduct business in an efficient, decent, and orderly fashion. When I began full-time employment with the church in my late 20s, then Apostle Cecil Ettinger mentioned the National Association of Parliamentarians, which I had never heard of before. And on his recommendation, I joined that organization and have been an active member ever since. The National Association of Parliamentarians is the organization that provides that certification of professional registered parliamentarian. Now, one thing that I need to mention about being a parliamentarian is we often joke with each other that if you put six parliamentarians in the same room and ask them a question, you would probably get six different answers. and we find that interpretation is fun, and it also can create some good conversations. I say that to say there's a similar thing that is involved with common consent. If you ask six different people, you might get six different opinions about that.
All righty. So even though you might get six different responses to that, John, I'm going to put you on the spot today and ask you, what is common consent?
The dictionary definition, put simply, is agreement by everyone.
Wow. And we can get six shades of meaning from that and more. So as many of our listeners are aware, we have a long heritage of common consent in Community of Christ, and the roots are deep and run all the way back to the beginning of the Restoration Movement. From Doctrine and Covenants 25.1b, which was given in July of 1830 in Harmony, Pennsylvania, quote, "And all things shall be done by common consent in the church, by much prayer and faith. For all things you shall receive by faith." So, John, what is common consent in Community of Christ?
Well, as the definition that I just shared from the dictionary suggests, it is not, for Community of Christ, agreement by everyone. Our understanding and practice of common consent has been an evolving process through the years, and we'll explore today some of what that has looked like in the past and what it looks like today. But let me share a couple of things from a paper that former Apostle Leonard Young put together on this subject several years ago. The first part that I want to share is quoting former President Maurice Draper, who in 1961 said the following about common consent. "Common comes to the English from Latin and is derived from two terms, com and munia. The first means with, and the second means duties. Together, these terms mean shared responsibilities. Consent also comes to English from Latin, the term being con and sentire. This latter word means to think or feel. Thus, the phrase common consent has a very rich meaning, to think or to feel together about shared responsibilities. Those who exercise common consent are learning to think and to feel together about responsibilities which they share through response to the divine will." And then Brother Young went on to add these words at the end of his paper. "At the outset of this paper, President Maurice Draper was quoted saying, those who exercise common consent are learning to think and to feel together about responsibilities which they share through response to the divine will. Now the church, again, is looking at new methods of embracing this call to think and feel together. Impelled by the call to discern God's will within the body of Christ, Community of Christ continues its tradition of openness to new ways to confer together. As the church moves into the future, it must continue to embrace its history of openness to new ideas and find processes that will lead to greater involvement in building common consent. Common consent is based on mutual regard and a strong sense of community. These underlie the history of decision-making in Community of Christ and should continue to guide the church into the future." And so, from my perspective, common consent is more about the people being part of the decision-making process, having voice. That's been the philosophy from the beginning of Community of Christ, not a dictatorial approach, but rather a theocratic democracy where the people have the right to speak and then to vote on various issues. Debate is an important part of our legislative process. Even on documents that the prophet president brings, We can ask questions. We can discuss and debate. That opportunity for me is very special. The idea of common consent, I think, is assisted by using parliamentary procedure. So let me talk a little bit about parliamentary procedure in the context of common consent. Community of Christ has used some form of parliamentary procedure virtually from the beginning. There were rules of order written by Joseph Smith III and Thomas Smith that were adopted by the General Conference of 1876. There was not a Robert's Rules of Order at that time, but there was a general understanding of parliamentary basic parliamentary rules, parliamentary procedures. Interestingly enough, the same year that our rules of order that Joseph Smith and Thomas Smith wrote, that same year was when Robert's Rules of Order first came out.
Wow.
And so I just find that an interesting point. Now, by 1970, of course, the church had gone through a number of iterations of those rules of order that had been prepared in 1876. And so the World Conference of 1970 adopted Robert's Rules of Order, newly revised, as the parliamentary guide for World Conference. Then when the bylaws for Community of Christ were revised, included in the latest edition of the bylaws is the provision that indeed the latest edition of Robert's Rules of Order, newly revised, would be the parliamentary authority for church conferences at all levels. Now, we're currently at the 11th edition of Robert's Rules of Order, so it has also seen many different iterations and updates through the years. It went from being a fairly skinny book to being a very thick book. But that is our parliamentary authority, and that's where we turn to for help in guiding us through the process of debate and voting and coming to decisions. Hopefully it is helpful in that common consent process. One of the fundamental principles of parliamentary procedure, which guide all actions in a meeting, is the protection of the rights of the minority to be heard. That's the wording of parliamentary law. And so for me, that's very important in the common consent process, that we follow a procedure that is specifically guided by that principle, that the voice of the minority should be heard. I think that's an important part of common consent. Our debate allows the body to hear various opinions before voting. That debate may result in a given motion or resolution being amended in such a way that the body can reach a more common point for all. Again, I think that's very important, that it's not a resolution or a motion that is brought before the body and the body is expected to simply hold up their hands in support. The body has the opportunity to ask questions and share thoughts and even to amend those resolutions and motions. Again, our understanding of common consent does not mean unanimous consent.
So, John, I'm going to throw you a curveball here as we're talking about common consent, because as you're describing this foundation of our approach to how we practice common consent, I'm having experiences flash back to me of the years I've been at World Conference, and you have much, much, much more experience at World Conference than I do, because my family didn't attend and I didn't go to my first World Conference until 1998. So I think our listeners, especially those who haven't been to World Conference or are new to Community of Christ, might appreciate you giving some detail as to how we actually do this mechanically and physically in the chamber of the auditorium. And perhaps you have insight into the history of what it looked like before what it looks like now, because we, you know, in the early days, and I've heard stories of the first conference held in the auditorium when they hadn't finished it yet and they had benches that they sat on, and I'm quite certain that they didn't have lectern microphones and computers. So walk us through a little bit of what this has looked like over the years, and then what it looks like now in the life of the church when we sit in legislative session.
Wow, that's an interesting question that opens up all kinds of possibilities. So I'll try to do it without meandering too much. In the early days, the general conferences were made up of just the elders, and so resolutions, issues were brought before just the elders. That, of course, is very different now. It's evolved into what we now see, which is delegates representing mission centers from around the world, which is really, really special for me. Now, one thing in terms of procedures that is very interesting is that because not all of the non-U.S. delegations can fill their delegations because of visa restrictions and that sort of thing, we practice something called proportional voting. And so if a delegation is supposed to have 10 delegates and only one is able to be here to represent that area, then proportional voting is used so that that one person's vote actually counts 10 times. And I think that's very special and helps contribute to the idea of common consent rather than a larger majority having more say than they otherwise should or would. But let me go back then to your specific question. Business can come before the World Conference in two or three different ways. One is that mission centers can pass a resolution for submission to World Conference. That is then sent in to the presidency, who reviews it. Sometimes there are questions, and they will send them back to the given jurisdiction and ask if they are okay if slight wording changes are made. But that's one way that that business comes before the conference. Another way is that the councils, quorums, and orders of the church can submit items for consideration by the World Conference. And then, of course, the presidency, the presiding bishopric, can bring specific kinds of business on their own before the conference as well. Once it goes before the conference, it is moved and seconded and then is open for discussion. Your point about when the auditorium was first open is quite interesting, because at that conference and many subsequent conferences, in order to get the attention of the chair, someone would stand and yell, "Mr. President, Mr. President." And so in essence, whoever had the loudest voice tended to get the attention of whoever was in the chair, and they would be called on. Of course, that has evolved, as well as our understanding of common consent, to the point where now you go to a lectern and you put in your delegate number and you indicate if you want to speak for or against, or if you want to make the motion, a motion, and then that goes into a computer system. And in front of the presidency is a screen that indicates the order that those came in and what each individual wanted to do, and they will call on those people accordingly. Now, we do observe the rule of alternates, which means a person speaks in favor of something, and then someone who's opposed is called on, and then back and forth in that process. Occasionally, just to make sure that voices are being heard, president or whichever of the presidents is in the chair will ask that the that the queue be randomized, and the system has a way of just, instead of putting them in the order that they got to the lecterns, it will just randomize the names in the queue. And again, the point of that is to make sure that that enough different voices are being heard. Once the chair believes that the discussion has been completed, they may say to the conference, "We believe that we have heard the views, when we're hearing the same view over and over again," for example, and they'll just go ahead and call for the vote. Or a member of the conference can call for the previous question, and then that, if the body votes in favor of calling for the question, then the vote is put immediately. There is a requirement that a certain number of pro and a certain number of con speeches be heard before that motion can be made, so that somebody can't hear one a favorable speech and then instantly stand and call for the previous question. Again, it's just a way to make sure that the minority voice is indeed being heard. One other aspect of how things are done now that is particularly meaningful to me is that, as I mentioned before, it used to be just the elders, and that evolved to a point where the vast majority of those delegates in attendance were ex officio, meaning they are delegates because by virtue of their office, rather than being elected by a conference. And that, again, has evolved to the point where all but 22 delegates at the conference are elected by mission centers around the world. The deep meaning of that for me is that the only requirement to be a delegate is to be a member in good standing. And all that means is that there is nothing in a person's record that would prohibit them from serving as a delegate. If there is nothing in the file that the presidency has on a few people, then they're eligible to be elected as a delegate. There are no specific requirements that have to be met other than to be a member in good standing. So we've had very young delegates, sometimes 10 years old, and that's just wonderful to look out and see a young person who is there because they're a member in good standing and they were elected by a Mission Center conference. Men and women equally represented there, having the opportunity to be elected equally. A common consent team was formed in 2010 to explore other ways of deliberating and discerning. And so that's an ongoing process that I'll say more about later, but that is something else that is different now than it was just a few years ago. The presidency organized this team to say, what else do we need to be looking at? What else do we need to be thinking about? And so we do have this team that is advising the presidency on possibilities. Well, let me stop there and ask you, did I cover the things you were thinking of for how World Conference is conducted, or do I need to go back and hit some?
No, I think that gives us a real good sense of how the debate and discussion is facilitated by the chair, and the use of microphones now and computer. It would have been very interesting to be a fly on the wall, so to speak, to watch the early days, which from what you shared was a long, long time, where it was stand up on the floor and shout, "Mr. President."
Yep. Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Yep.
So do you want to go on and talk about this kind of new emerging dimension of common consent?
Yeah, it did grow out of a concern for certain issues that needed to have a little different approach than basic parliamentary procedure. And so the common consent team proposed a process that can be used. And so we do have, in addition to the basic fundamental principle of common consent, we do have a special process or practice that we refer to as the common consent process. It has been used for national conferences. It does involve a different approach. The common consent process has three main parts: listening carefully, surveying, and then refining together. Instead of just simply calling for a yay or nay vote, the delegates are asked, what is your level of support? And that is recorded electronically. We have keypads that that the delegates use to input their level of support. Those are flashed on big screens to give a sense of where people are in the process. And those are taken periodically during the discussion. It is not just one vote to get a for or against vote. It's more than just pro or con speeches. You can speak according to your level of support. And those that process has, as I said, has been used for national conferences, and the last couple of world conferences we have used that. Most recently, last conference to discuss our statement on tithing and stewardship. And it was a very, very important and very interesting process that the conference went through. One point that I should mention here is that while it's a very interesting and worthwhile process and practice, it does take time. It's not the kind of thing that we can use for every single item of business. There are many items that are routine or that are not controversial that can be handled by regular parliamentary procedure very, very well. But the common consent process is an important step for us, I think. We will be following parts of that at the 2019 World Conference as we consider a resolution that was actually submitted by two mission centers addressing the subject of nonviolence. The wording of the two resolutions was so close that the presidency approached those jurisdictions and said, can we combine these? Does anybody have a problem combining these? And so the difference between the two was one word in each. And so they used both words in a combined resolution. And so the common consent process will be used. It's slightly modified from what we have seen before, but it will be used again. And the conference will have the opportunity to consider this resolution in that way. Let me read to you a statement that is included in on the website regarding this process. The common consent process has three main parts: listening carefully, surveying, and refining together. Because of this proposal's scope and the time constraints of World Conference, the conference will use only the steps that involve listening carefully and surveying. It will not attempt to refine the proposal using the common consent process. As stated above, final action on this legislation will occur through parliamentary procedure. The First Presidency believes this approach will help the body deliberate this resolution. And so, again, some of the practices of the common consent process will be followed, but not quite to the degree that we have used it in the past. Another aspect of the common consent process is, rather than a majority vote being all that's necessary to pass or adopt a resolution, a higher percentage who are favorable towards the item is required. And so as people indicate their level of support in the process, it requires more than a majority vote. Now, as the statement says, the actual final action on this piece of legislation will occur through the normal parliamentary procedure. And so that aspect of the common consent process will not apply as we consider this at the 2019 conference.
Yeah, I think the common consent process has been such a fascinating evolution of common consent in the life of the church. I want to talk about that just a little bit more for some of our listeners that have never seen that happen. And I'll just kind of give a brief overview based on my experience, John, and then you jump in and refine anything or redefine things if I don't get it quite right. My understanding and what I've experienced in the past is that there are five different levels of support, and I'm going to look to you to tell us what those generally are called in a couple minutes. And each person in the delegations is given a small handheld survey device that beams its response to whoever's running the master computer. So you click the button that correlates with the level of support that you wish to choose. And then within seconds, but certainly within a minute, maybe 2 minutes tops, a beautiful bar graph comes up in front of the conference, a different color for each bar, and in response to a certain question, which helps us understand where the body is on a particular dimension of the issue, which reflects some of the discussion we've been having and hearing from each other, we see in a very much more detailed way than we get when we raise our hands yay or nay on a resolution what the body is thinking. And sometimes it actually kind of peels apart layers of reasons why people find themselves at different levels of support. It's also interesting that these little polling devices for this common consent process are, each one has a different number. So your delegation leader that may be responsible for, 20, 30 or more people in their delegation shepherds these polling devices and hands them out and collects them back. So they're very closely monitored. So there's really not an opportunity for someone to respond to a particular question. So tell us a little bit more, and especially I think our listeners would like to know, what terms do we associate generally with those five different levels of support?
Yeah, and there's not one absolute set. Different ones have been used for in different settings, but it's basically from absolutely no support, no support, not sure, some support, and then absolute support. But different terms have been used depending on the nature of the question. Now, let me go back to your point about the keypads, because that is an important thing. You can't just keep passing the keypad around and have six of your friends input data who may not be delegates. Because they are registered, whatever the last button pushed is, that's what gets registered for that keypad. So only one vote per voting time is actually recorded, and that's the last one that is pushed. And so it's, we won't be using that exact method to determine the final outcome at the 2019 conference, but it has been used in a variety of settings, as I said before, including national conferences and world conference. We have used it at some Mission Center conferences in a slightly adapted process. It is, again, a way to allow for the highest amount of opinions, the largest amount of opinions to be heard. And again, that principle of parliamentary procedure is just expanded of protecting the voice of the minority and hearing more and listening more and that sort of thing. It might be interesting for the listeners to hear a little bit more about the Common Consent Team, because it does illustrate some of what you're talking about. So let me share a little bit about the team. In August 2010, the First Presidency appointed a Common Consent Advisory Team and charged it with recommending additional methods of deliberation and discernment to be used by the World Conference in seeking common consent on matters of importance to the Church. In 2016, as I mentioned before, the World Conference utilized that method to discuss our statement on tithing. In preparation for the 2019 World Conference, the First Presidency chartered a Common Consent Team for the purpose of shaping, implementing, and managing a Common Consent process to be used for a specific topic that is strategic to the mission of the Church. And that's what I shared with you earlier. The team priorities, I won't read all of these, but just to give you a sense of what the team tries to accomplish or works to accomplish. They are to assist the First Presidency with identifying a key topic to use the Common Consent process to address by the World Conference. They recommend to the First Presidency the core questions the World Conference delegates will consider. They work with the First Presidency in designing the flow of the Common Consent process for the 2019 World Conference based on the key topic and core questions. They will develop a plan for how best to prepare the Church in advance to go through that process. And so they have some very specific things that they pursue whenever we are planning to use the Common Consent process. Again, it is intentional. It allows for a high degree of involvement from more people, and it is not a simple matter of an expectation that the body will simply raise their hands to approve something. It's an effort to help the people, as former President Morris Draper said, to live and grow together and to find ways to come to that common consent.
So, John, I think it's fascinating, your team and the work that the team has done, because my understanding is, for example, in the USA National Conference in 2013 and other times in large conferences like World Conference, when we've used the Common Consent process, that there are members of the team, or maybe you from that team and people that help you, who are working like in the wherever that secret room is where the computers are manned, to allow the chair or those facilitating the Common Consent process with the body to actually write key core questions as things emerge in the sharing time that get at a dimension that has kind of come to light during the course of the Common Consent process. And you can actually input those so that live time we can get a little deeper or actually address a dimension that perhaps we didn't have a question ready to roll. Is that true?
To a certain extent, yes. I do need to clarify one thing. While I served on the Common Consent Team early in its life, I am not on that team any longer. I do still serve on the Conference Organizations and Procedures Team, which is loosely connected. We don't work together directly, but yes, you're right. And the same can be said for resolutions that or motions that someone might like to bring up during World Conference. There is a team that will review those and make suggestions for how to reword them so that they're more compatible with our language, our procedures, whatever it might be. But yes, there is a team that gets together and looks at how the conversation in the Common Consent process has gone, and provides alternative language or alternative approaches. Having said that, as the presidency has said relative to the question that will be considered in 2019, the conference will use only the steps that involve listening and surveying. It will not attempt to refine the proposal using the common consent process. But yes, the process itself does have that provision. We won't be following it at the 2019 conference as we have for other conferences.
Fascinating. I can't wait. It's going to be exciting. So we get a lot of questions sometimes about, so what do you do if, you know, a resolution passes, but the margin may not be a wide margin of support, and yet in majority rules, it does carry, and that becomes part of the life of the church. And we have something that has been used. I think the Faithful Disagreement paper was published in preparation for the USA National Conference. Is that correct?
Yes, so that's correct.
Tell us about that and how that, in a sense, walks with us as a body who practices unity and diversity.
Yeah, this is one of those that I think has been a blessing, an inspired blessing from God to the church, because as I said before, we do not view common consent as being unanimous consent. We do recognize, as you've said, that some individuals may have differing views on issues even after they have been voted on and approved or adopted. And so the faithful disagreement definition and principles, which is available on the Community of Christ website, addresses this aspect of life in the church. It was indeed prepared by the Council of 12 in March of 2013 in preparation for the U.S. National Conference. Let me just read part of this because I think it's quite meaningful. Faithful disagreement is defined as actions and or responses by a person holding a different view about a specific policy, belief, principle, or other position of Community of Christ. This disagreement with a Community of Christ position or direction is helpful, responsible, faithful, and bounded by loyalty and commitment to the identity, mission, message, and beliefs of Community of Christ. A person who faithfully disagrees is welcome to share about the church position with which she or he disagrees. The intent of the sharing is to improve the overall faithful response of the church to God's intended direction without classifying others as unfaithful. And again, one of the specific principles says simply, agreeing with Community of Christ positions, official and unofficial, is not a test of faith for priesthood, members, and friends. I think that's such an important aspect of common consent and life together in community, to recognize that, yeah, I may have a different opinion, but I'm still welcome here. As our wonderful hymn says, for everyone born, a place at the table. And we believe in sharing together and learning together and growing together, even if we don't walk in lockstep.
I love the way you put that. And I think that is such a strength in Community of Christ. It's not without challenge, certainly, but it has pushed us in ways that have helped us grow that I don't think otherwise we would have journeyed together. And it makes us stronger for sure. Well, John, is there anything else you want to share with us today that perhaps I didn't ask you about?
Well, I think we've kind of at least alluded to this, but I would like to just make this statement. Our pursuit of common consent through the years, in my humble opinion, is an excellent example of two of our enduring principles, those being the worth of all persons and unity in diversity. For me, that's really what common consent is about. I appreciate the church's efforts to continually seek ways to be as inclusive as possible and recognize the value of each individual and to constantly strive for unity in diversity. It's kind of like a choir. Everyone doesn't just sing the melody line in lockstep. We strive to sing the various parts in harmony and thereby have a more rich and beautiful sound. And I think our efforts at pursuing common consent, whether through parliamentary procedure or special common consent processes, help get us closer to that beautiful sound.
Amen. And I would say oftentimes at the end of some challenging legislative sessions in the chamber of the auditorium, when the chair, who is often the prophet president of the church, in that closing moment of that particular legislative session, invites the assembly to turn to hymn number, whatever is selected. There is a certain sense and spirit in singing together at the end of legislative session that I think, I love the words you have used to describe common consent, because you certainly hear that in the voices of all the delegates and those who have come to observe that particular legislative session as we sing out in loud and strong voice in four-part harmony. It's a beautiful thing. Well, John, for those of us who might want to learn more about common consent and community of Christ, or maybe just want to brush up on the process and procedure for World Conference, are there resources you might recommend that could help us?
Yeah, I've mentioned Community of Christ website, and there are some articles there that that address common consent, especially one that President Vesey wrote prior to the 2016 World Conference, and in which he describes the common consent team. It's if you go in and search on Vesey common consent, it should show up, and it's a rather lengthy article, but it does go into more detail than what we have had time to explore here today. There will be common consent and parliamentary procedure guides in the World Conference materials, in the materials that are given to the registrants for World Conference. Those are very helpful. There is a book called Robert's Rules of Order, Newly Revised in Brief. and it takes the key elements of Robert's Rules of Order and makes it's about a fourth of the size of the whole Rules of Order, Newly Revised. And it's an easy read. And so that if you want to get a little bit deeper, that's a really good place to go. Robert's Rules of Order, Newly Revised in Brief. A parliamentarian has to say, or you might want to read the whole book, all 816 pages of it.
Well, maybe that'll be on my bucket list, maybe, but not anytime soon. What about those who are called to preside at business meetings? Because we do have all congregations hold congregational conferences, also called business meetings. Some of our pastors are new. Some want to brush up before their next business meeting. So what kind of resource or guide might be available for those folks?
Yeah, I think the aforementioned items would be helpful, particularly the RONR in brief. That can be very helpful to presiders. In the Church Administrator's Handbook on page 47, or starting on page 47, there are some really good helps for planning a business meeting, how to carry it out. And so I would highly recommend that. In the Pastors and Leaders Field Guide, Leading Congregational Conferences, the business meetings of congregations, and there are helps in the field guide for doing that, similar to what's in the administrator's handbook. It's in the Establishing Organizational Effectiveness section on page 13. Now, I almost hesitate to say this, but I'm going to throw this one out. If I can be of any help to a presiding officer, I'm happy to do so. If you have a question, one of the things that I find that I do quite frequently with the 10 mission centers that you mentioned before that I work most directly with, the leadership teams will send me proposed resolutions and ask me to go through and make recommendations or change the wording or, you know, tell them if it's just out of order. So if I can be of any help to any presiders who may be listening, I'm happy to do that. And you can find me on the church website. My email address is among the others that are easy to find on the website.
Thank you, John. And I just want to let the whole world know that I have John White on speed dial whenever I have a question of parliamentary procedure. And as John knows, I have accessed that on occasion.
Yep.
Alrighty, that is great. So that pastor and leaders field guide is available on PDF on seaofchrist.org, as is the church administrator's handbook that John mentioned. A lot of things on the website if you just want to put in the search as John suggested, and of course the article that he talked about regarding common consent is really fascinating. Well, John, thank you so much for being with us today and helping us understand what common consent is and how it's practiced in Community of Christ. Listeners, if you would like to hear more from John White, I invite you to check out episode 42 on the topic, Why Hospitality, and also episode 129 on virtual ministries. Also, World Conference 2019 is April 5 through 13, and everybody is welcome, and I mean everybody. So you are invited to join us for a week jam-packed, and I mean jam-packed, with learning, singing, serving, worship, fellowship, and practicing common consent as we meet in legislative session to talk about pressing issues and do the business of the church. Check it out at seeofchrist.org. Just enter World Conference 2019 in the search box and you'll have a whole bunch of things to see. Thank you so much for being with us today, our gentle listeners. This is your host, Robin Linkhart, and you are listening to Project Zion Podcast. Go out and make the world a better place. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Project Zion Podcast. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, or whatever podcast streaming service you use, and while you are there, give us a 5-star rating. Project Zion Podcast is sponsored by Latter-day Seeker Ministries of Community of Christ. The views and opinions expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Latter-day Seeker Ministries or Community of Christ. The music has been graciously provided by Dave Hines.